Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. The time is 9:15 a.m. With me this morning at the table, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
And I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. Senator Bishop should be joining us. Senator Bishop, welcome. I apologize for the delay. On today's agenda is SB 31, State Employees Pay Increase. Do I have that right? An act relating to compensation, merit increases, and pay increments for certain public officials, officers, and employees not covered by collective bargaining agreements and providing for an effective date. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? I'd like to invite Commissioner Fisher, as well as Kate Sheehan, and do we have three? And Leslie, right off to the table. You're going to stay back, Leslie? Okay. Welcome, Commissioner. Please present your bill.
Thank you. My name is Sheldon Fisher. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Administration, and as the Chairwoman has stated, Kate Sheehan is with me here today. And we're here to present SB 31 relating to a salary freeze for our non-union employees. Just to give you a little bit of a sense of the bill and what it does, it essentially freezes any increases to pay in the form of the COLAs that have been at times given, merit increases, and for those who may not be familiar with the way our salary structure works, the first 5 years of an employee's life, there are merit increases each year, assuming that they have an appropriate review. And then after those first initial years, there are pay increments that are paid every other year. And it also prohibits bonuses to exempt agencies. The bill also allows the governor, he would like to reduce his salary by a third, and it allows him to do that. And it would be effective for two fiscal years. To give a little bit of a sense, this covers both exempt and partially exempt. Exempt employees are defined by statute, the governor's office, certain legislative staff, certain commissioners. It's a fairly small group. And then partially exempt are either defined by statute or the personnel board, and it really refers to people who set policy in state government are treated as partially exempt. Most of our deputy commissioners and directors fall into that category. And this bill would cover both of those categories. What does the bill do for employees that are not covered under a collective bargaining agreement? This bill would apply to them, including employees of boards and commissions, executive officers. It includes employees that are in the executive branch. It includes employees that are not covered by a collective bargaining agreement at the University of Alaska, and then, of course, the governor, the lieutenant governor, department heads, and legislatures. It does not include the court system. The bill is required as an effort to lead by example and address the fiscal challenges we have. The governor felt like it was appropriate to ask employees at the same time we're asking other Alaskans as we reduce the permanent fund payment and other efforts that it was appropriate to make this request of our employees for this 2-year period. In terms of the estimated savings, there's approximately 5,000 employees that will be affected by this. This represents 23% of our workforce. I guess I would say that sometimes we've been asked, why do we start with this group? Aren't we singling out uncovered employees? We have 11 bargaining units. We bargain those approximately every 3 years. We bargain about a third of that group. And these 23 as a group represent the second largest group of employees. And the savings, as you can see, over the two fiscal years would be about $4.2 million. This does not reflect savings from the university. The regents at the university have already implemented policies similar to these restrictions. This is the executive branch only, so it doesn't include the legislature and certain corporations as well. That is the extent of our prepared remarks. If there are questions or concerns, I'm happy to answer them.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Commissioner. I support the effort. You just asked yourself a question and didn't really answer it, just to be fair. You said, why would we start with this group? And you answered for with mathematical benefits, but not philosophical logic, if you will. So essentially we're freezing the salaries of only non-covered employees. How do we get to the point of where we get the covered units to agree? And I know that they have given quite a bit on pretty much straight zeros, but not on the merit increases. So how do we, instead of just hitting the people that have chosen not to be covered, if you will, how close are we getting the covered employees to the table to agree that a salary freeze for a couple of years at a minimum is appropriate with our current fiscal gap?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to give a more complete answer. You have to start somewhere. And as I say, this is a principle in our negotiations, but I think that in reality, if we don't have this legislation as a foundation dealing with our non-covered employees, I think it will be extremely difficult that we could start with our bargaining units. But to answer your question specifically, the philosophical perspective is I believe that it's appropriate to start with our uncovereds through this kind of legislation. And then your second question, I think that with the passage of this legislation, we are in a position to either negotiate or support through some sort of an arbitration, if we can't get there in negotiations, the concept that a similar freeze would be applicable to our bargained units. But we will have to bargain it. That's something we'll have to do contract by contract.
Other questions on the overview? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when June 30th, 2019 comes about, or July 1, do those merit increases of 3.5% start at the salary that they're receiving now, or are those merit increases automatically included in your – what is your starting point on July 1 of 2019?
So with the passage of this legislation, their salary will be frozen for these 2 years, and then starting in that subsequent year, in July 1 of 19, then they would start to receive their merits in step increments based on the frozen level. There will not be kind of a makeup.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Just for a little history, Madam Chair, if you'll give me a little bit of room here. Where did we... So the merit increases are not based on any kind of a CPI, and when we plan for growth in what this government is going to cost in the future, and you look at the 10-year OMB estimates, it includes the step increases. But how did we ever get to 3.5% as opposed to something that is indexed to kind of an actual cost of living increase?
So I'm going to answer a little bit, and then I'll ask Ms. Sheehan to also, because she's probably got more history. The logic of our salary schedule contemplates that when people come in, as they grow in their job, that additional experience merits or warrants a pay increases over time. And, I think I've testified before here that certain of our positions, a number of our positions, and particularly some of our more valuable positions, professionals, either lawyers or technical professionals, we tend to start quite a bit below, and then there's the growth associated with it, below market, I should say. And so that's kind of built in to the logic. There's you start at a level and you grow. And then also built into the logic was the idea that there should be CPI, cost of living adjustments, depending on that are intended to address increases in inflation, CPI increases. I think you know that in this administration we've not negotiated any CPI increases because of the fiscal situation. And I think I've said before that I believe that the curve is too steep, that we grow too quickly compared to market. But there's two dimensions to that. The early years, for certain positions, we probably start too low, and then we grow too fast. And so there's a logic to it, and it's something that I think we would welcome the opportunity of kind of working collaboratively in kind of rethinking that if that's appropriate. But I'll turn a moment over to Kate to talk a little bit about the history.
For the record, my name is Kate Sheehan, and I'm Director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. The percentage between merit increases and pay increments is set in statute, and the merit increases dates back to the 70s, and then pay increment, originally 3.75, was in the longevity statute, which also dates back to the 70s, and then in 2013 was reduced through legislation to 3.25%.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki.
Just so I'll throw a little private sector philosophy out there. Commissioner, do you believe, you talked about rewarding the growth. Do you believe that every employee grows at the same rate and should be compensated as such?
I share your private sector experience, and I think that my personal experience and view is that employees contribute differently and should be rewarded differently.
Last question, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Is there any potential in the future to have an incremental reward system for those that are growing? I'm not going to attach it to performance. I'll just say growing at a quicker rate than others. Is there any potential for a base that keeps up with inflation and an incremental increase for those that are performing over or growing over and above the mean?
Yeah. So through the chair, this is something we would need to work together on. As Ms. Sheehan has indicated, much of this is embodied in statute. We have had some discussion about these concepts, but haven't progressed it to the point where we're prepared to present any legislation on that.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just can you ballpark just what the payroll is for state, just the overall state employees? X amount of hundreds of millions, billion, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's in the neighborhood of about $1.5, $1.6 billion. Is that right? Is OMB?
And ma'am, through the chair,
right. Senator Dunleavy.
I understand that you don't have it at your fingertips, but it's a ballpark, roughly. Okay, thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner Fisher, it's my understanding there, at this time, there isn't really a cap to this annual pay increments. So over time, what happens?
Through the chair, during the life of an employee, they receive the merit steps for the first 5 years, and then every other year, for as long as they're a state employee, they receive a pay increment step increase, and it continues.
So with the law of compounding, how does that start affecting after about 8-9 years? What does that do?
Commissioner.
Through the chair, it continues to grow. And depending on the position, some positions, I think the salary just continues to grow during the life of that employee.
Okay, thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, that's true to a point, but at the end of the day, they hit the end of the alphabet on their step increases.
Ms. Sheehan.
Through the chair, no, there actually is not an end of the alphabet. The salary schedule shows Z, but under the rules, I suppose you could go to a starting at a double A. We don't have anybody who is at a final step.
Okay.
Senator Bishop.
For myself, it would be curious out of these, I'd like to see out of these 23% of the workforce that we're talking about, give me all the, can you give me all the ranges by, you know, how many 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, and where are they at in those same groups aggregate by A, B, C, D, E, or F? I think it'd be good just to take a look at. Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So just going back to my previous line of questioning, when is your estimate based on having no cap and an every other year 3.25% pay increment, what is your estimate that an employee could effectively double their salary?
We've done that math, and I don't recall. But let us get that number so I've got a real answer to you. But I also would say that depending on the category, some employees, and I think this kind of gets to your point, we believe that certain categories, as they go through their career, start below market, ended up above market, certain job classes probably never catch up to the market. And so each the equity or fairness of that structure varies depending on a particular position.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you very much. I think it might make sense. This seems to be a kind of short-term fix to perhaps more of a long-term structural, I wouldn't call it problem, but just structural framework that may warrant closer scrutiny. It might make sense then to do and I know this has been done in the past, salary comparison with the private sector, and to create reasonable ranges for each employee level, I guess you want to call it, and to what makes sense, and then look at that every 10 years, kind of have a plan, because things do change, because we want to make sure that we are right sizing and being fairly competitive within all categories, and that it is costly for the state on many, many levels, both retirement as well as annual payroll that Senator Dunleavy was talking about. If we are allowing employees with no extra job necessarily duties or responsibilities to actually price themselves then out of the market, it kind of becomes it can become financially problematic. So I think it might make sense during this time where we are in event that this passes to maybe look at a more of a fair and reasonable and sustainable salary structure. New employees are being paid market rate initially, but at the same time, we don't have something that's so unsustainable that after 20 years, we can't afford to pay anybody. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
I think in a nutshell, I can sort of, this is how my mind sees the problem, right? You have a 3.25% salary increase, and we based our spending limit on Anchorage CPI, which is around half of that, right? So unless the inflationary effect on all other goods and services are non-existent, in order to remain at that Anchorage CPI growth, we will be continuously cutting other parts of our government just to maintain, if the spending limit passes, right, We will be continuously cutting just to stay status quo once we go back to, once this freeze is no longer in effect. If we don't have a better system of analyzing what the market should pay on positions and reducing the steps afterward. So I hear what you're saying on them starting low and eventually getting to the point of where they're at market or above, but you'll continuously be chasing your tail if you don't actually have more of a market-based compensation scale without the increases, because you can't catch up.
So through the chair, one fact that's important to understand is that we don't receive a budget increase for these salary increases. The theory of the structure is that as a person kind of grows through and then retires, when that person retires, someone young is coming in, and the block of budget that a department receives is fixed, and they manage these salary increases consistent with that. And so I think most departments, and some departments have struggled with this more than others, but most departments, I think, have actually successfully been able to manage with that fixed amount of personal services dollars, as I've described. I don't necessarily disagree with other statements that have been made and the need to kind of think this through, but I think that it's important to understand that this does not, that these salary increases don't require an annual appropriation to cover them.
Any other questions? Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, do you have any evidence of attrition? You track an attrition rate in the department on this group of employees, these 5,000 employees?
I don't have a number specifically around these five. I don't know, Kate, if you have, Ms. Sheehan, I don't know if you've seen anything on these 5,000.
Through the chair, Senator, I don't have a number for this group. I can get a number for this group. We're approximately about a 13% separation rate, but that's going to include all separations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Commissioner, you're prepared to do a bill walkthrough by section to describe for the public what each section of the bill accomplishes?
We'd be happy to do that. If it's okay, I'd like to invite Bill Milks from the Department of Law, who is the drafter of the bill, to come help us with that. But we'd be happy to do that.
We do have a copy of the sectional analysis. I see that. Yes, please approach the table, and we'll go through that. I just was going to point out that if we could get a higher level overview than the sectional analysis, at least for one, section one, it's fairly lengthy, and it is available online for the public to read. You could identify yourself for the record and then do a walkthrough of the bill by section.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Bill Milks. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. Section one is a section for the uncodified law. It's a statement of intent, and it's setting forth the financial circumstances that are the background that have led to this bill. Section 2, the subsequent sections are largely going to try to identify each particular work group that's within the coverage of this bill. As the commissioners described, this bill covers what's called the non-covered state employees. And there's a sort of a patchwork of different places where non-covered employees are working. So Section 2 refers to the classified and partially exempt employees of the executive branch, non-union. That's the group that is in our what we call the statutory pay scale at AS 3927. And for this group, it's providing for the 2-year suspension or freeze on merit step or pay increments. As the commissioner explained, there's already no cost of living increase for this group because there would have had to have been a statute passed to provide for it. Section 3 is addressing the what's called the exempt service. These are folks that are not expressly paid under the statutory pay scale. The exempt service covers employees of all kinds of different exempt agencies, public corporations, et cetera. And this provision here seeks again to provide a general pay freeze for employees who are working for those agencies. And here we have it described as a suspension of general salary increases, merit steps, pay increments, et cetera, because some of these exempt agencies don't necessarily pay in exactly the same way that the statute provides for the partially exempt. So we're going to pay freeze for 2 years. Section 4 addresses salary adjustments for the governor, lieutenant governor, department heads, and members of the legislature. For this group, again, the same two-year suspension. They're separately addressed in this section because you're basically putting on hold a process that's otherwise provided in statute for the State Officers' Compensation Commission to recommend salary increases for the elected officials and the legislators. So that would put that on hold for 2 years. Section 5 addresses the employees of the legislature to provide for the same two-year freeze, and it's the employees of the legislature as well as the couple agencies within the legislature, Office of Victim Rights and Ombudsman. Section 6, same two-year freeze for the, we say, certain employees of the University of Alaska. Again, this is your non-union employees. Section 7 addresses the issue that was raised with the Section 7 and 8 address the issue that was raised with the commissioner about, well, what happens 2 years from now after the freeze is over. And what happens is employees at that time can become eligible again for merit steps or pay increments. But basically, this two-year time is a timeout, so the time during the 2 years does not count towards your eligibility. Section 9 is a provision addressing that this act does not apply to individual employment contracts entered into before July 1. That's to address, because this bill is so broad and covering all non-union state employees, that we would need to be sure we were not impairing any contracts, and that what there we'd be referring to is it's possible some of the highest level officials at some public corporations might have multi-year contracts that were already entered into. It does not refer to collective bargaining agreements because they're not covered under this bill. Section 10 authorizes regulations for the Commissioner of Administration or the Personnel Board to adopt if necessary. Section 11 and 12 are the effective dates. The bill is effective July 1, except for Section 11 provides that any regulations as necessary, that provision could take effect before July 1.
Are there questions from committee members on the structure of the bill? Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I didn't hear the Senator Dunleavy asked a question, I think, earlier. What the 23%, the 5,000 people that are affected, what is the total dollar amount, gross salary, wages, benefits for those 5,000 people? I thought I heard there was a number, and I'm not clear on what that number was.
Forgive me. I thought the question was what are the total cost of personal services for the state, and so I misunderstood the question. I don't know if OMB has the number specifically for these 5,000. That's something we can get very quickly, though.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair?
Senator Bishop.
And just briefly, if you could follow up that number for these 5,000, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Commissioner, there were two questions. Senator Dunleavy asked for the total. Senator Bishop wanted to know the total for this group of covered individuals, so the 23%, and then Senator Dunleavy's question, I believe, was for the full. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, does having your thoughts on this, does having an automatic as well as merit increase actually disincentivize turnover or retirement? If you have this automatic occurring, does it disincentivize retirement turnover?
That's interesting. I can see how it might, in the sense that particularly depending on your tier in our system, you know, staying another year and receiving another increase would benefit your retirement. And so I can see at some level how it might. I guess the question is really compared to what's the alternative? And every organization has some sort of a salary structure, and so But compared to a flat rate, I can see how it might. Yes, thank you.
Follow-up, Senator Dunleavy.
Sort of a different question, Madam Chair. Under this salary freeze, will the executive branch continue to have the ability to perform salary overrides under this bill?
Through the chair, so I don't know the answer to that question.
Brief it is. We're back in the record. Kate?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, it would depend on how we're defining a salary override. A lot of our salary overrides are, an example is if you're in a location with a geographic differential that goes down, we freeze your pay. Or if you're reclassified to a lower range under collective bargaining agreements or other personnel rules, we freeze your pay. So we pay you on a salary override. You're no longer on one of our defined salary schedules. Those would still occur. Any type of advanced step placement when you're first hired and there's recruitment difficulties or exceptional qualifications, if that's how one is defining a salary override, those would still occur as well.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just a follow-up. So, I'll be the first to admit I'm not 100% sure of this, but if you could help me. But wasn't it the policy of the governor's office to freeze hires? Was it just hires, or was it this type of process as well?
So through the chair, I'll respond to that. The governor's office implemented a hiring restriction, and so we have continued to hire for critical personnel, mission critical functions. As people have retired, we have every department has needed to hire and needed to backfill. So it has not been a complete salary freeze. We have imposed, or the governor's office has imposed, heightened standards on hiring and asked for a greater degree of scrutiny around hires.
Through the chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
So it's a restriction, not a freeze.
Through the chair, correct.
Okay, thank you. And I have one more, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunn Levy.
So under this bill that's presented, could employees be appointed at a range with a step in excess of what the salary table would dictate, consonant with their accrued time and grade at that step?
I'll let Ms. Sheehan respond to that.
Do you want to repeat the question?
Through the chair, yes, please.
So under this bill.
Senator Dunleavy, could you pull the mic just a bit
closer? Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So under this bill, could employees be appointed at a range with step in excess of what the salary table would dictate, consonant with their accrued time and grade at that step? Could you appoint someone, say, at a 23D if they had less than 3 or 4 years of service?
Through the chair, you, in order to appoint somebody above the first step, step A, you need to be able to show recruitment difficulties and or exceptional qualifications, or the employee would have to be a rehire into that position, then they could be appointed at the step upon which they left. There are years around the rehire rules, 2 years. There is a provision as well in statute that allows the governor to make certain appointments at a step higher than F step, but it's a very narrow exception.
Senator Dunleavy.
Could you define that exception?
Through the chair, it's in Senate Bill 92. It's in Section K, and it has to do, the governor's office has to be able to have evidence of extreme recruitment difficulties, positions of such that they're very high level, they're very specific to I'm trying to think of an example that's been used before. It's only been used a couple times before, but it's the type that of a position that doesn't fit into our pay plan because of oil or gas experience or some sort of experience that is very unique, and it's hard to find somebody.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record, Ms. Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is in the statute. It is in 3927.011, and it is in Section K. And essentially, the authorization must be based on a determination that the action serves a critical governmental interest of the state, the employee possesses exceptional qualifications, recruitment difficulties exist, or the action is necessary due to competitive salaries in the relevant labor markets. Senator, and this determination must be in writing.
Thank you, Ms. Sheehan. Senator Dunleavy.
Just to follow up, that could be construed by some as to be fairly large. I know that's a subjective statement, but I'm just saying it can be. Anyway, thank you.
Other questions on the bill? I'd like to move to the public hearing. Commissioner, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Sheehan. The public hearing is open on Senate Bill number 31, an act relating to compensation, merit increases, and pay increments for certain public officials, officers, and employees not covered by collective bargaining agreements and providing for an effective date. Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on SB 31? Is there anyone online or off net? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Is there any further discussions? I'd like amendments on SB 31 are due on by Friday at 5 p.m. Senator Bishop, would you like to cover the fiscal notes today so that we're in position to move on amendments?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, finish what you're doing.
Thank you. Okay, fiscal notes. Previous fiscal note one still applies. They're in two fiscal notes in their bill packets. I know everybody's familiar with it, but I'm just going to compress the verbiage and we'll walk through these two. So, department various appropriations or various allocation is executive branch, OMB component number is zero. Estimated savings for the executive branch in FY18 is $2,269,500. From the fiscal note, the estimated savings that may be realized is $4,165,000 over the two fiscal years for the executive branch. Estimates for the Alaska Permanent Fund, Corporation, the University, and the legislative and judicial branches are not included in this fiscal note. Additional savings in fiscal years beyond FY 2019 are anticipated because salaries will be lower in those years than if temporary freezes were not implemented. However, that amount is indeterminate. The FY 2018 budget includes an initial estimate in the branch-wide component of $1,817,000. The updated estimates of $2,205,000 includes entities where data was not yet available at the time of this initial estimate. This estimate may be reflected in each component budget versus in a statewide component at the legislature's direction. In addition, $2,205,000 reduction for the merit and pay increment freeze, a $64,000 reduction in the general funds in FY 2018 is included for a one-third salary reduction for the governor of Alaska. The total FY 2018 reduction is $2,269,000. Fiscal note number, the department, second fiscal note is again various appropriations or various allocation legislative branch, OMB component number zero. That fiscal note is also indeterminate, but estimated savings for the legislative branch are $407,600 in FY18 and $1,179,200 in FY19.
Are there questions on the fiscal notes? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, can you explain why the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and the Permanent Fund Corporation appear to be outside the normal salary rules as written in this fiscal note?
Ms. Sheehan, Commissioner Fisher.
I'm going to let Ms. Sheehan respond to the question, which I think the question is, why is Alaska Housing Finance and was it the Permanent Fund also outside the normal salary rules?
Permanent Fund Corporation.
Permanent Fund Corporation.
Because they appear in the wording, it says they appear to be outside the normal salary rules. Why do they appear to be outside the normal salary rules?
Through the chair, I believe the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has a separate pay plan, and their payroll is separate from other executive branch employees. For the Alaska Permanent Fund, they as well have their own unique pay plan that they are subject to.
Senator Hoffman.
The question, I guess, is I understand that, but ultimately the legislature has the appropriation powers, and if the legislature decides to include them, it would seem to me as the ultimate appropriating body, we can include them.
Through the chair, so you're absolutely right, and this legislation does include them. This fiscal note was prepared by OMB, and this is a notation, I think, reflecting the scope of the fiscal note, not the scope of the legislation. So the legislation does include those agencies. It's just that the fiscal note did not encompass it because of a lack of information.
So the calculations are not here, but they do fall under the this particular legislation. Thank you.
To the chair, yes.
Thank you. Other questions on the fiscal note? With that, we will set this bill aside. Again, amendments are due by Friday at 5 p.m. When I have those, if there are amendments, I'll distribute those as soon as we get them so that committee members have an opportunity to review them over the weekend. My intention, if all goes well, is to bring the bill back up before the committee next week, hopefully early in the week. Anything else to come before the committee? Tomorrow at 9 a.m., we will have Senate Bill 66, the State Council on the Arts Public Corporation before us. With that, we're adjourned.